Good morning, and thank you for joining me on The Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the show for Monday, November 14th, 2022. And yesterday in history was the birthday of John Dickinson, November 13th. I think it was 1732, but this is a guy that most people have never heard of today. I know those of you who watch the show even just once in a while or listen to it on a regular basis, whatever, you of course have heard him, heard of his name. I cite him all the time, but he was actually famous in the 18th century. They called him the penman of the American Revolution. So on this episode, I want to highlight some of his most important views, primarily in four categories that kind of permeated his writing throughout the year. There's a lot of lessons in his work from the time of the Revolution, both philosophically and strategically, that we really should consider following a little bit more, well, much, much more today. But first of all, before getting to that, a quick hello and a huge thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Whether this is your first episode or you've been here for every single one since day one, I can't thank you enough. While we allow people another moment or so to get notifications to join us on the mainstream platforms for the live stream, they don't always send out these notifications too quickly, but I'm glad when you guys get them and are able to join us. As a reminder, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, now that I'm back on my regular schedule, 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. Hi to Tim Martin in Arizona. Good to see you, buddy. Dixie Strong in Bama. M. Gabriel, Kirk Morrison in South Carolina, Lawrence Smith in West Virginia, Cheriton Farmer in Missouri, Sharon Patriots, blessed morning, freedom-loving patriots. Good to see you, Sharon. Brian in Georgia, Irwin Havernick. Been a while to see you on the live stream. Good to see you in Omaha. Cowboy Roy Rogers. I know I'm repeating a few names here. Mr. Greenbottle 24. Awesome. Sherry Cole in Idaho and everyone else. I know I'm missing a few people, but I really just wanted to say thank you, whether I said your name or not. I'm so grateful for you spending time with me. But let's get right to this. And Dickinson's work is very important to us at the 10th Amendment Center as well. Of course, so many other founders, Madison, Jefferson, Samuel Adams, James Otis Jr., the old revolutionaries, Mercy Otis Warren, many others we've learned from. Some of the stuff from Dickinson and a few others are certainly foundational to our strategy. For example, one phrase that he used in his Letters from a Farmer in Pennsylvania, which I'll just mention in a moment, I don't know if you can see it up on the screen or even on this duplicate version of our membership cards. There's a Latin phrase there, concordia res parve crescunt. I know I say that wrong almost every time. I can never train myself to get it right. A Latin phrase, it means small things grow great by concord. He was urging the people in response to the hated Townshend Acts of 1767 to take even the smallest step, any step forward. And of course, it's the old saying, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And he said, if you take a step towards liberty, you have a chance to basically plant the flag and draw other people to it, and you can build upon that. And of course, he was right. Because small things did grow great by concord from 1767 when he urged the people to do that through, 1783 or so. And I did an episode covering just this phrase a few years ago now, over 3 years ago now, that I haven't listened to again in quite some time. I try not to listen to myself too much because I talk a lot. But Winning for Liberty, the story of small things grow great by concord. I hope you will check that out. I should mention that all the reference links, the stuff that I'm talking about in this episode, plus a bunch of other platforms, not only are we on the platform you are watching or listening on right now, we're on a ton of them. And the reason we do that is for twofold. One, we want to be where you are. So if you use a platform and that's the most comfortable for you and that's what you prefer, we want to try to be there. So if we're missing on something, let us know either in the comments or team@10thamendmentcenter.com. But then also, we got to look at this as a backup. You never know who's going to kick you off and when that's going to happen. So if you notice that, we haven't been around for a while, you might want to check some other platforms. You can find all this stuff over at our show homepage, 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. Anyways, this phrase, this Latin phrase that means small things grow great by concord, it was the closing statement in the last of his 12 letters from a farmer in Pennsylvania, which I mentioned was in response to the Townshend Acts. And these were the most widely read documents on American liberty up until publication of Thomas Paine's Common Sense in 1776. So Dickinson was famous. They knew his name. They knew he was the guy who was writing it. He had done some work in response to the Stamp Act and other things prior, but this really, really brought him a lot of attention. And, there are many core principles that were foundational to the American Revolution, not just ideas philosophically, but how to deal with the largest empire in history, because that's what they were dealing with at the time, that I think we should start applying at least the principles underlying the approach we can start applying more and more today. And there are four of them that I want to share. And it's not just from this particular work. I want to go through some of the stuff over his entire career. One is liberty. Liberty is obviously a focus, because if you're not thinking about what your goal is, then, well, if you've lowered your standards, you're going to end up with low results. Two is precedent. Three is power. And four is people power. Well, I'll get to all this in just a moment here, but let's start with liberty and, well, natural rights, of course. That's what we're talking about as well. Here's Dickinson in 1776, one of my favorite quotes. I can't actually get a link to the original document on this, but one of these days we'll find it published online, or maybe we'll start hosting some of this stuff over at TAC. Our liberties do not come from charters, for these are only the declaration of pre-existing rights. I know those of you guys who've been listening to me blab about this stuff for a long time, over 4 years now, you know that I hate the phrase constitutional rights. It makes my skin crawl. The idea that you have your Second Amendment rights, it's the notion, the idea underlying that is that you get your rights from a document. And the people who have the power to interpret that document, well, the people who are allowed the power to interpret that document, even though they're not the ones that are supposed to be doing it, the ones who have the most power, the most guns, they're going to make the limits of that. And you shouldn't be surprised when those rights get diminished year in and year out, no matter which team is in charge. And that's basically what's happened with so many so-called constitutional rights. Instead of asserting these as rights, no matter what government has to say about it, no matter what a charter or a constitution has to say about it, instead of having that mentality, it's really the other way around. This is a population that we live in begging on its knees for permission almost at every turn. Anyways, our liberties do not come from charters. They are a declaration of pre-existing rights. This one came in Letters to the Inhabitants of the British Colonies. I'm not probably going to read all the titles of all these. I will link to them in the show notes section. I publish a blog post 1 to 2 hours after the live stream is done, tenthamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. This one's June of 1774. Liberty is essential to the happiness of a society and therefore is our right. We have our right to liberty no matter what government has to say, people with power. And you can't be happy without being free. And that's something we'll get to in a moment as well. Liberty is essential. A society that is not free is not truly happy to the founders and old revolutionaries, and especially to John Dickinson. Here he is, another one. This one he co-authored with Thomas Jefferson, the Declaration of the Causes and Necessity of Taking Up Arms, right after I said I'm not going to read all the titles. That's a big one. July 6, 1775, passed by the Second Continental Congress. This is just months after the shot heard round the world, Lexington and Concord. And they went to Jefferson and Dickinson and said, we got to explain to the world why we're fighting back, because we don't want them to think that we started this garbage. And so, well, they started it by asserting their rights and not just being compliant and unlimited submission to an arbitrary government. So I guess it depends on your perspective. But the founders and old revolutionaries believed that you should be free, and government had limits. Government had to stop doing stuff. And so they were explaining, look, we may love our mother country, but you know what? There's nothing greater than our love for liberty. And Jefferson and Dickinson wrote, our attachment to no nation upon earth should supplant our attachment to liberty. Again, liberty is the primary object. He said again here, this I think was 1764, as a foundation and security of all the rest, I wish you a true love of liberty. If you don't love liberty, you don't have the courage and the strength and the willingness to defend it. Again, you shouldn't be surprised when that liberty is gone over time. And this one, I think, some ties all these views about liberty and natural rights together. This is in his Letters from a Farmer. I think this is his last one, number 12. Let these truths be indelibly impressed on our minds, that we cannot be happy without being free, that we cannot be free without being secure in our property, that we cannot be secure in our property if, without our consent, others may, as by right, take it away. Man, I could probably do a whole episode just talking about how many principles are in there from self-ownership to property rights and so much more. But that one, I think, sums up so much of the American revolutionary principle. We know that the real American Revolution, as John Adams described it years later, was a radical change in the thoughts and viewpoints of the people. And I think this was a big part of that. And of course, understanding sovereignty is I don't want to get into other episodes. So number one, I think in his work throughout the years, he focused on liberty. Now, no one ever achieves everything that they want to achieve, but he certainly made that a primary goal. Number two is power. And of course, if we're thinking about the founders and old revolutionaries and what we should do today is we should never trust anyone with power, no matter what. And I know a lot of people want to just distrust one political team, but not the other. Or they're kind of wary of their own side, but it's like all they care about is defeating the other team. And then they let a bunch of stuff go from their own team. And what does that do? It creates an environment that George Washington warned would lead to a frightful despotism. That is, one faction defeating the other and back and forth and back and forth with a spirit of revenge. And that's what we have today. Side note. Anyway, so here's John Dickinson. All artful rulers, I think that's redundant, all artful rulers who strive to extend their power beyond its just limits, endeavor to give their attempts as much semblance of legality as possible. They will always try, I think they recognize, and Dickinson covers this as well, that I'm going to get to here in just a moment, they recognize that the people, even if they don't, if they don't understand the Constitution, they don't understand liberty, or maybe they're afraid of it, they still try to sell them on it. And we see this all the time today. When have you ever heard of some politician saying, you know, this thing that we got to pass in Congress, it's totally unconstitutional, but we don't care. No one ever says that. Every single thing that every politician has ever proposed is somehow legal. And that's absolutely impossible if we're talking about the fact that we live under the largest government in history and the Constitution, as James Madison described in Federalist Number 45, would be a set of the federal government. Their powers would be few and defined, not unlimited, largest in history. That's absurd. So we're always being sold on this. I think the people really just want to believe that their people that they support are good. And artful rulers, I guess we'll use that redundant phrase, will always try to go along with that because they recognize they can get away with more. And here's how Dickinson described that much better than I can. Again, he said, the love of liberty is so natural to the human heart that unfeeling tyrants, again, redundant, unfeeling tyrants think themselves obliged to accommodate their schemes as much as they can to the appearance of justice and reason. Oh, this is to save people. This is to protect people. I'm following my oath of office. I love freedom. It's nonsense. So they always seem to be obliged to sell the public that they're doing the right thing. They're following the rules. And he says, and to deceive those whom they resolve to destroy or oppress by presenting to them a miserable picture of freedom when the inestimable original is lost. Think about so many times when we hear about regulations today. Those are always sold as a way to protect us. Think about the Patriot Act. We were told that you were patriotic for supporting probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, warrantless, illegal, unconstitutional surveillance schemes in history. We still have it today. We're told that the Affordable Care Act was to make health care affordable and to save people's lives. So many things that they tell us is always a lie, but that's what politicians do. And they've done this with foreign policy and domestic policy forever. And Dickinson recognized that as well. He said, the money said to be taken from us for our defense, maybe employed to our injury. And he's always, Dickinson was very much a moderate in his approach. Some of the things that he had to say certainly sound radical to us today, but at the time, he was definitely a middle-of-the-road kind of guy. He didn't even sign the Declaration of Independence because he thought he abstained. He didn't vote no. He abstained from it because he didn't think the time was right. He wanted to see foreign alliances. He warned that they might lose if they rushed things. They ran into a lot of trouble, of course, in the coming months. But he was always kind of middle of the road. So he's saying, you know, the money said to be taken from us for our defense may be employed to our injury. My version of that is the money said to be taken from us for our defense is almost always
employed to our injury, if not always. And we know that government loves it. The people with power love it. The supporters of the monster state absolutely are motivated to keep people fighting amongst themselves while they keep ripping us off and expanding their power and destroying lives. And that's what Dickinson had to say, too. To divide and thus to destroy is the first political maxim in attacking those who are powerful by their union. Those of you who follow libertarian Twitter, for example, I do for some sick pleasure here and there, like watching a reality drama. People who agree on 92% of stuff, or 80, I would take 20% at this point. People who agree on a vast majority of issues spend almost their entire time fighting each other rather than the bad guys. And that's, I think, a big, big mistake. Anyway, so number two is power and the dangers of trusting people with power. People are always going to screw up and do bad things. And people who are drawn to be in positions of power, we should actually add, especially in a time when there is so much power, are generally the bad guys. So people who are running for office are normally not good people. So here's number three, a warning about precedent. And we go back to his great pamphlet, his broadside against the Stamp Act in late 1765. You've got a couple of things in here that I think is really important. He said, if you comply with the act by using stamped papers, you rivet perpetual chains upon your unhappy country. So he wasn't saying, you know, this is bad. We got to get rid of it. Let's just follow the law. Now, this is where here even the moderate is basically saying, don't even follow the law. He's not saying wait for repeal. Let's go through the process. He says, if you wait for it, you personally are establishing the precedent that the government wants, which is they don't have any reason to repeal something if people comply. So if you comply with the act, you're riveting the chains around your unhappy country. You unnecessarily, voluntarily establish the detestable precedent. And we should start looking at every government act, law, order, rule, and regulation as potentially, in fact, if let's say 90% of the stuff they do is not authorized by the Constitution, you could just blanket, let's say 50%, 60, whatever the number may be, it's a big bunch of it. And if you just blindly said everything that they do is establishing a detestable precedent to do more damage to the Constitution and liberty, you'd be doing much better than waiting to get it repealed, because it never gets repealed, really. He says, you unnecessarily, voluntarily establish the detestable precedent which those who have forged your fetters ardently wish for, to varnish the future exercise of this new claimed authority. In other words, to establish a new baseline, to expand upon this. And in fact, he had the same kind of argument. So that was 1764. Of course, we know there was a great deal of resistance to the Stamp Act. They ended up repealing it. I mean, it was a backhanded repeal with the enacting of the Enabling Act, or the Declaratory Act of 1766, where they claim the power in all cases whatsoever. But there was an opposition to the Stamp Act. It was so invasive. And he didn't see the same level of opposition to the Townshend Acts. And he covers that in his papers, in his letters from a farmer in Pennsylvania in 1767. So just 2 years later, very similar process. And here he is warning in letter number 7 that even though some people were saying, oh, but this isn't as invasive, this tax isn't all that much, he's still warning about the danger of precedent, because it doesn't matter how small the attack is on your Constitution, on your liberty, they're always going to use it for more. And here's how Dickinson put it. Some persons may think this act of no consequence because the duties are so small. A fatal error. Man, I should have really been hammering on this at the time in 2018 when the bump stock ban came in. And we were totally opposed to it. We're opposed to it today. It's totally unconstitutional. It was done by a so-called Second Amendment president who is garbage on the Second Amendment because he would go along with that kind of thing and enforce federal measures that shouldn't exist. And what we got was so much pushback because so many people in that realm of things are so dedicated to a man rather than to liberty. And they don't care about the precedent because it's small. I don't care about bump stocks, I've heard over and over and over, because they're a kiddie toy. They're stupid. No serious gun rights enthusiasts use a bump stock. So who cares if he bans that? I'm not going to go against the Second Amendment guy because of this. But as Dickinson warned us, this is a fatal error. And he's absolutely correct, because the next guy, of course, tries to use the same process and again and again and again. Dickinson said, that is the very circumstance most alarming to me. Of course, to him, the big attacks on liberty are going to generate big response. But it's the little ones that he thought were the most dangerous because they established this precedent. The journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step for liberty, but of course, the other way around as well. And they've been chipping away at our freedom for ages. That's the very circumstance most alarming to me, this small duty, this small no-consequence program. He said, for I am convinced that the authors of this law would never have obtained an act to raise so trifling a sum as it must do had they not intended by it to establish a precedent for future use. Of course, every government act is a precedent for more of the same in the future. He said, to console ourselves with the smallness of the duties is to walk deliberately into the snare that is set for us, praising the neatness of the workmanship. I mean, he's basically saying like, oh, well done on that snare, that trap that you made for us. Oh, too bad it's going to destroy our liberty. And that's a very, very important point. His statements on precedent to me resonate more than almost anything else. And I know I've told this story many times, but I think it's appropriate to include here because we're, you know, celebrating or commemorating Dickinson's work in regards to his birthday. And in the, this is letter 9, the closing of letter 9, he tells another story about precedent. That he goes through history. Of course, the founders and old revolutionaries were students of history, and Dickinson really was a good student of history. And he says this, tells this story. Spain was once free. Their Cortes resembled our parliament. No money could be raised on the subject without their consent. And of course, if you tie that in with the notion of being free, and you can't be free without being secure in their property, and they can't take your property without your consent. These are all the definitions of liberty and freedom to Dickinson and to the American Revolution. He's highlighting the fact that in Spain, at one point, they had a parliamentary system where they couldn't raise a dime without the consent of the representatives. Now, for those of you who are very much into individual liberty, you'll say, well, that's still a problem, but that's a different discussion. So he's saying, he goes on, he says, one of their kings, having received a grant from them to maintain a war against the Moors, decided that if the sum which they had given should not be sufficient, he might be allowed for that emergency only to have more money without assembling the Cortes. And how many times do we hear this today? Oh, emergency powers. I mean, I've read through the Constitution. I've read through the Articles of Confederation. I've read through all kinds of stuff. I've never seen, well, these restrictions on government power are subject to government determining that there's an emergency and they don't have to follow it anymore. But we hear this on war powers, on domestic powers, on health emergency, whatever it may be. And the more that the people go along with allowing these things, like the Patriot Act, for example, or the progressive income tax was going to be a temporary wartime emergency measure, the more that the people allow these emergencies, the more that we're going to hear that everything is an emergency and they have to take action. Everything is always an emergency. We live in an emergency state almost constantly. And then, of course, government gets to be, well, arbitrary power, which is the very definition of a tyranny. So he's saying here, look, this was a time Spain had restrictions. And then the king, because of war, and war is, of course, always the great enemy of liberty, he wanted additional power just to protect people just this one time only. And of course, what happened, it had great opposition. He said the request was violently opposed by the best and wisest in the assembly. It was, however, complied with by the votes of a majority. Man, the majority idea, 2-1, is really not a way to protect your freedom. He said, and this single concession, again, was a precedent for other concessions of the like kinds until at last the crown obtained a general power for raising money in cases of necessity. Oh, well, we need a little extra loot. We don't need to follow this rule because we have the precedent that we've been able to do it in other situations, and they keep expanding on it. And he said, from that period, the Cortez ceased to be useful and the people ceased to be free. They didn't lose their freedom when government used that power to attack them directly. They lost their freedom at the moment they gave that one tiny precedent. And if you think about that in the American system, that means freedom has been gone here in this country since at least 1791, but I have other episodes on that. And he wrapped that one up with a Latin phrase that I can't read, but I will read the English translation, which is oppose a disease at its beginning. Oppose a disease at its beginning, because of course, slavery, he said, is ever preceded by sleep. And that brings me to the last one, and it ultimately gets down to the people. For Dickinson, it's really up to the people to defend their own liberty. So let's go back to that broadside against the Stamp Act. He said, if you comply with the act, you rivet perpetual chains upon your unhappy country. So government, if it gets down to compliance, it's not like government's backing off. Dickinson recognizes that government is going to try to enforce the Stamp Act, but if enough people refuse to comply, you can bring it down. So ultimately, it's up to the people to defend their own liberty and to not participate with unconstitutional acts, whether the government agrees with them or not. And that's really what it goes down to. And he said, the Stamp Act, therefore, is to be regarded only as an experiment of your disposition. And we should treat every federal act, law, order, rule, or regulation that goes beyond the Constitution, which is most of them, as an experiment of our disposition. And maybe it has been all along, and the disposition of the people of the United States is not the land of the free and the home of the brave. It's the land of the subservient, those begging for handouts, unfortunately. So it's the Stamp Act is to be regarded only as an experiment of your disposition. If you quietly bend your necks to that yoke, you prove yourselves ready to receive any bondage to which your lords and masters shall please to subject you. And that is Dickinson being the moderate that is very, very radical for today. You can't just quietly bend your necks to the yoke. And of course, I just have an image up here again, that phrase, oppose a disease at its beginning. For Dickinson, he said, if you're going to be a free people aren't those who happen to live under a government who happens to be doing the right thing and respecting them. That's basically luck. You just happen to have a situation where government is not using its power against you. He said, instead, a free people are those who live in a scenario where government is so controlled and checked that as soon as it tries to get out of bounds, it can't. And so he said this, a free people can never be too quick in observing nor too firm in opposing the beginnings of alteration. In other words, changes in the constitutional structure by fiat. You can never be too free, too quick to observe or too firm in opposing attacks on the Constitution and liberty. Now, a lot of people today think that what that means in practice is one of two things, and both of them are really the same error. And that's one, just show people in power the Constitution. Say, hey, look here, here's the Constitution. You got to be following. It says you're not allowed to do that thing that you've been doing that you tell us is okay to do, so stop doing it, like waving a red flag in front of a bull or something like that. Or on the other hand, that the Constitution has been a failure and it failed to stop people from in power from doing the stuff that they weren't supposed to do in the first place. And they're both based on the same, I guess we can call it a fatal error. Here's how Dickinson put it. A good Constitution promotes but not always produces a good administration. The better the Constitution, the more difficult it is for government to make obvious violations of it. And then the people are alarmed about that. But when you have these terms, and Jefferson actually warned about this during his review of Benjamin Franklin's proposal for the Articles of Confederation, I'm surprised he didn't really talk about it in the proposed Constitution for the United States. It never came up in what I was looking at in his writings, but maybe someplace. But he didn't like, and he specifically said, you know, I don't think we should have ambiguous terms like general welfare. The more broadly that a term can be read, you shouldn't be surprised because, as Dickinson put it, all artful rulers will try to give their acts as much legality as possible, even when it's not. They don't care. That's what they try to do. They just are counting on the people to be ignorant of what the rules say. So ultimately, for Dickinson, keeping the government within the bounds of the Constitution is not about getting the right people in power. It's about the people defending their own Constitution and their own liberty. It's about what he said was the supreme sovereignty of the people. He says it is their duty to watch and their right to take care that the Constitution be preserved, or in the Roman phrase, on perilous occasions, to provide that the Republic receive no damage. And I think that might be, I change my mind on this probably every few hours, but that might be the most important principle of the Revolution that we need to think about and apply more today, and one that has been totally, completely ignored for generations. Again, it's up to the people to protect and defend their own Constitution, their own liberty, whether the government wants them to or not. And it's this kind of principle, this kind of message that we spend so many hours every single day, every single week, 24/7, 365, working to get out to more and more people. And nothing helps us get that job done more than the financial faith and support of our members. If you got a couple of bucks of that dirty government fiat, throw it our way. It starts out at just $2 a month for a 10th Amendment Center membership. And we will use that more than anybody can even imagine to stand for the Constitution and liberty, no matter what they have to say. Again, 10thamendmentcenter.com/members. Let me take a look over in the chat and see if there's any comments or questions that I can get back to. M. Gabriel says, when did anti-government become a pejorative, right? Ooh. Kirk Morrison, we're talking about unconstitutional acts. He mentions the Patriot Act, the War Powers Act. They have destroyed our freedom. Absolutely. Resist the first approaches of tyranny. That's M. Gabriel citing Mercy Otis Warren as well. Of course, we have to actually take a mentality of resist first. Everything else comes later. And for Dickinson, he still was still very moderate. But if you think about this, he didn't actually say, you know, go to battle at the first step. He was the one trying to slow things down before the war for independence. But he did recognize that a refusal to comply was an important part of this and something that should be employed quite a bit, especially if you look at what he was saying about how to deal with the Stamp Act. It wasn't, hey, let's beg our ministers to get rid of this. Let's beg Parliament. Let's only send resolutions. He recognized in his response to the Townsend Act 2 years later that, yeah, maybe the opposition, the resistance needs to start with a non-binding resolution opposing something. And that's what can generate a situation where small things grow great by concord. We cannot comply with this. And the more you put that out there, the more that people will refuse to comply. And when enough people refuse to comply, they can't enforce it, because government is never going to really repeal things that everyone continues to submit to. I'm going to look over in the comments and questions a little bit more later today and tomorrow. Leaving those comments, especially in the archive or reviews on Apple Podcasts, smashing the like button, all that stuff will trigger algorithms of the mainstream platforms and tell them to show us to more people. It really helps out a great deal. Don't forget that membership program, 10thamendmentcenter.com/members, and I will get a blog post published for this episode, I don't know, maybe like 2 hours or so, like noon Pacific time or so today. And that's where I'll include all the links that I'm mentioning this, so you can read and learn more in context on your own time. Again, I appreciate you spending some time with me today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope your week is off to a great start. Hope you had an awesome weekend. And I'll see you next time here on the Path to Liberty.